Hello and welcome to The Last Wicket, a cricket podcast for those who like their episodes to be infrequent and unpredictable as far as when it would drop. I'm your host, Benny, and today I'm joined by my longtime co-host, Mayank, and a fast-becoming frequent guest or collaborator, Karthik Jayaraman, a.k.a. Elite Cynic. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me again. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you guys back to talk about some cricket, because it's been a while since we released our last episode. And like I mentioned before we started recording, you know, one of the upsides of recording after a kind of a short break is that there's so much that's happened in between. And so there's so much more to talk about. So the idea of this episode is to talk about what's happened in 2024 so far. And somehow, crazily enough, we're already through the first quarter of the year. You know, the year's flying by. And as far as cricket is concerned, we witnessed a very fascinating test series between India and England. There was the second edition of the women's IPL with a very rare sight at the end, where Royal Challengers Bangalore actually lifted the trophy. And there was some drama with the BCCI contracts for the men. And there's a new and exciting rivalry in cricket that, well, it's not, I don't know if it's new, but definitely one of the more entertaining rivalries in cricket today. So we'll talk about all of that. But Mayank, yeah, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I mean, I'm just curious on what everybody thought of, you know, baseball and England strategy. My personal thoughts, that was a great series, and it was, despite obviously India's injuries and all of that, it was a really great series to watch. But in general, like, baseball definitely put more pressure on Indian bowlers than I had expected. Like, I think a lot of people were like, oh, India, you can't at home. There's nothing, you know, that's going to happen. And although the scoreline might seem flattering to India, there were definitely moments in that test where England was in. And I think that was sort of the baseball approach. I mean, there's little doubt that they get a lot more credit than they should, but the habit of batting fast definitely seemed to have put pressure on veterans like Jadeja and Ashwin, who, you know, rarely have a bad day in India.
Yeah, I agree with Mayank. It was a great series. You know, five test series in which I think, you know, all five tests were like fairly exciting kind of a thing. You rarely see it. Although Dharmashala by the end of the fifth test, they gave up. But still, I thought it was a very engrossing series. But I have a different theory, though. My theory is that there's so much emphasis on data these days that teams seldom prepare or are taken aback when, you know, debutants are thrust onto them, you know, because they don't have enough data to work on them or prepare against them. So plus these debutants are actually fairly experienced in first class cricket. So I feel that that is the key thing that actually helped India in this series. Because we had four debutants, or rather five debutants in the series. I thought we did fairly well there because England didn't have any data points. And same thing, you know, has happened. I can keep going how it's happened in the past, but I just felt that that's one area where India took the advantage. Other than that, I thought it was a great series. Baseball, enough has been spoken about it. I love the fact that they take a positive approach towards cricket. They've been trying hard to explain that baseball is not what Lawrence Booth and all those people are trying to, you know, market it as. It's something else. It's be the best, etc., etc. But unfortunately, it's not taken like that. I think India did great in the series.
I have a lot of thoughts on this series, but I'm going to try to keep this short. The first thing, baseball. You know, it's a topic that I've tried to convince Mayank that we should do an entire episode on, but we've never actually got around to it. And I don't think we need to anymore, because it's one of those things that's almost peaked, and I think not necessarily on its way down. I don't think after this series that we're gonna, just beat it down to the ground just talking about it. I'm sure it'll come up again when England, start their next series, but I think India showed that beyond all the buzz and all the hype over it, if you play some good cricket, stick to the basics, you can still do very well against basketball. What was amusing for me was all the talk from, the English players, ex-players, journalists, like you brought up Lawrence Booth. It was just amusing when Joe Root scored this very conventional Test 100, which was pretty good. It was a good knock. But then he was like, this is basketball. And it was just like satirical at that point. I was like, this is just comical. And of course, Ben Duckett's comments. And it was just a farce at one point. I get the idea. I get the concept. It's an approach that will work only for England because they have the players who can pull it off, coupled with they're not necessarily very good when it comes to some defensive aspects. So they're focusing on their strengths. So I think it's an approach that really works for England, but India kind of showed a refined approach to it, right? Like you can play smart, aggressive cricket without just throwing a bat at everything. And to England's credit, they didn't just throw their bat at everything, but there were times where they seemed very muddled. Like, they wanted to go on full attack and then they would kind of completely go into a shell. Whereas India were just like driven by players who just seemed very confident in themselves and had a clear plan. And I think a lot of credit needs to go to the backroom staff on that as well. So, I'm just glad that we don't have to talk about basketball. I feel like that entire series, whatever happened, we'd always go back to basketball and hearing about Ben Stokes' amazing captaincy. And I think 90% of that was just Sanjay Mantrick.
I was gonna say, like, we don't need to talk about it because Sanjay Manjrekar talks about it for hours.
Yes.
One other point I'd like to add is Ashwin's podcast. I don't know if you guys follow that. He actually said that had it been Australia, they would have actually drawn a couple of tests. So, in a way, baseball or whatever approach that they're taking is actually producing results, which is good for cricket. But whether or not it's producing results in favor of England is something you, because the results are there to be seen. Everyone talks about their position in the WTC table. I don't buy that because they've been docked a lot of points because of overrate and stuff. But their win-loss ratio has started coming down since the Ashes and all. I have a personal opinion on this that I feel going forward, baseball or this concept of under McCullum or whatever McCullum has started, I don't know if his contract will be renewed, but whatever he has done will actually get refined in the way that don't play this harakiri sort of don't take this approach all the time. I mean, play according to the situation. Do what Root did at Ranchi. Play that sensible knock when the need of the hour comes, and you don't have to go all out every single time. I think that I'm really looking forward to baseball in Australia. I want to see how it works. I want to see how they go about it. It'll be fun. I'm waiting for the Ashes.
Same here. But I also want to focus on the Indian team because, again, with a lot of focus on Ben Stokes, basketball, and the comments from the English players, it's easy to forget that, not only the fact that India won the series, but some of the players, it was like a breakthrough series for them. So actually, let's talk about the debutants first. So we had Sarfraz Khan, Devdutt Padikkal, Dhruv Jharel, Akash Deep. Am I missing one more?
Rajat Patidar.
Rajat Patidar. It's easy to forget. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was mean. But 4 out of 5 is not bad. It was a series where I heard a lot of stuff on social media like this is England's best chance because India was missing Kohli and Shami and due to injuries there was KL Rahul was away for after the first test and so there was a lot of talk about this was England's best chance. And so India were kind of forced into this spot where they had to just throw out these players who had pretty good, first class records or first class season, but throwing them up against a side that seemed really determined to win a series in their, style, in their much talked about fancy approach. And they pretty much did well overall. So what are your guys' takes on the debutants and how they fared?
From a debutant perspective, I feel like we've all been talking about Sarfraz Khan deserving a debut for so long that it almost felt natural that he succeeded. You know, it was like, yeah, he should. Like, there's, it wouldn't make sense if he turned up and, looked out of place. Then we would have questioned, like, the Indian bench strength and the Ranji Trophy and all of that. So, Sarfraz Khan, I don't think was the big surprise. Obviously, the other Patidar had a disappointing series. There were at least a couple of times where he was looking very good, reaching teens or 20s and then getting out. So tough luck on him. I have no idea how he's going to make his way back to the team because, as KL Rahul gets fit, Rishabh Pant gets fit, of course, Kohli will be back for at least a couple of years. I don't see how he gets back to the team. He might get an odd series here and there, but yeah. I doubt, like, especially considering he's already, on the other side of 30 or reaching 30. So, but other than that, Dhruv Jurel, absolutely amazing package. Like, he was obviously the standout. I don't think anybody would disagree, in despite of, brilliant opening day spell by Akashdeep. I don't think anybody would disagree that Dhruv Jurel was just standout, looked absolutely a
Absolutely.
complete batsman, whether attacking, whether defending. Off both front foot, spinner, pace, whatever it was thrown at him, he looked as if he was just, and he's been sitting ready. So one of those selections which I'm sure the Indian selection committee would be proud of because he didn't actually come with that much cricket, He didn't come with the record like Sarfraz or amount of experience like Patidar. So that way, I'm sure the selection committee must be pretty happy that they've spotted a right talent at the right time.
Yeah, good points actually. I think I personally feel Jurel was the difference, especially at Ranchi in that chase. India were like what? India had lost like 35 for 5 or something, 36 for 5, and one change that Gill had made was to come down to Bashir and Jurel, right? The way he handled the spinner. I mean, honestly, I've been watching a lot of cricket, the Indian team playing spin. I just thought that the way that he handled with those dabs and soft hands and the way that he rotated the strike, I just was super impressed with him because I thought we have a gem in our hands, and credit to Agarkar and team to actually blood him. I thought, I'm not talking enough of Sarfaraz because Sarfaraz is a known commodity. Everyone knows what Sarfaraz's ability. Although there was an article by Sid Monga about why Sarfaraz is not being selected is because he scores most of his runs at number 5 in first class, and that's where you get easy bowlers and tired bowlers, so etc. But I'm glad that he proved his worth in this series. But then nobody should be surprised that Indian debutants are actually doing well. We have not talked about Padikkal. I thought he had a good debut in Dharmashala. So I think we should not be surprised because Indians, I noticed a funny pattern actually. Since Melbourne, right? In Melbourne, 2021, we sent in Siraj debut together. Sydney, Washington Sundar and Natarajan debut together. Then you had Ishan Kishan and Jaiswal debuting together in West Indies. Then you had Sarfaraz and Jurel debuting together. And basically, India has blooded a lot of debutants off late, and it's almost like 1 plus 1, because you see, they have not been shy. Some of them have been forced, and some of them have been, kind of planned. Like, for example, in Nagpur, Surya Kumar Yadav and KS Bharat debut together. So, India's resource pool is enormous. So, I just feel that. It should not be of any surprise that these debutants are coming and starting to do well or whatever. On a different note, I felt that our the spell by Akashdeep, the on debut, right? Those 3 wickets that he took, I was super impressed by it as well. He has a lot of body of work in first class cricket, so I'm glad that all that is paying off, and credit to the selectors again to make sure that the right people, it's the people are rewarded based on whatever they performed in first class cricket. It's just that we need to take this forward and build a pool. But now the question is, like, Dhruv Jurel is like almost certainly a lock. What happens when Rishabh Pant comes back? Do we play him as a full-time batsman, or what does Dhruv Jurel do? All those questions need to be answered, but it's a happy headache to have, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially you both your points about both of your points about the selectors. I think it's very true. I think even Dravid mentioned that initially both Rohit and Dravid were not really in favor of handing a debut to Jurel. When they did, they wanted to try Bharat for one more game, but apparently Agarkar was like really encouraging them or pushing for them to give the Jurel a chance. And so we are from a country where selection day, when they announce it's like outrage day. Everyone gets to crib about like their favorite player being omitted or anything. So the selectors are always like an easy target, so credit where it's due. As far as the debutants and even just in general India's bench strength, all I will say is I'm cautiously optimistic. The thing about debuts is like sometimes players just come, out of the bang and then they kind of fizzle and fade away. And so I always want to give players some time. It's kind of like how Rohit was. Rohit was always, especially at the start of the series, he didn't really want to talk much about Jaiswal. And then at the end of the series, he was like, okay, now I can talk about Jaiswal, because he was just like, I don't want to say anything and jinx him kind of thing, which I get. I just feel like, especially in a country that's so passionate about the game, and everyone is quick to give their opinions and criticize and kind of analyze everyone, just like what we're doing right now. There's so much pressure on the players, right? And as much as we are celebrating the Parikhils, the Sarfraz, Akashdeep, and Jurels, someone like Patidhar, can you even imagine how he must have been feeling? Because the whole and everybody's celebrating all these successes, but him and Bharat, to an extent, they are the forgotten men. So it is a very harsh environment. It's a professional environment, so you can't spend too much time pitying anyone. But at the same time, these players are all human, and you just gotta hope that there are the right people and the right resources in place to help these people. And like Mayank said, we don't know if Parithar will ever get a chance, but that's where you gotta go and grind it out and keep scoring the runs, taking the wickets, and hoping you get a chance. So I'm cautiously optimistic, and I know there are even more players in domestic cricket whose time will come, especially as Ashwins, Jadejas, the batters, they all kind of step away. Some of the players will have to come in and make an impact. I was very impressed by Devdutt Parikhil and Dhruv Jurel, the little bit that I saw them. Sarfraz Khan, I don't know, there's something about him that I feel like he will do well in India. I'm still out to see how he performs abroad. Something about the way he bats, I'm still not fully convinced. And then Akashdeep, I think for me, he was the most exciting debut, just because I remember watching when he came in, like starting to bowl, and I was like, I hope he doesn't go for runs. Like, that was my mindset. And then the way he was bowling, and then he got that wicket of the no ball
No ball.
with the stumps flying, and I was like, wow, like, so excited. The fast bowlers are always exciting, and especially when you see stumps flying out of the ground. It's always exciting. So I really hope that India's at this point now where we have like a Siraj, sure, but Bumrah is the one that we always turn to, right? And I'm really scared that he's gonna get injured just by over bowling him. And so it's always nice to have these extra players. So overall, I'm really encouraged by the bench strength and the kind of players that are coming in. And this should put pressure on the more established players too. You know, they can't just expect to be retained just for their past record. So I'm really curious to see where they go from here. I know some tough challenges await. I think they're going to tour Australia later this year, if I'm not mistaken. So that'll be another exciting time. Oh, and we have to mention, because we've been talking about debutants and new players coming in. Yeah, I just wanted to quickly mention, because I don't want to forget this. Two players who are really the future of Indian cricket, as far as I'm concerned, Yashasvi Jaiswal and Shubman Gill. Yashasvi Jaiswal, like, he's in this form that where, you know, he could just like not play cricket for a while and then go walk in and just probably score like a run a ball 100. You know, he just has this Sehwag like approach. And I'm not saying that he's the next Sehwag. I think he has a long way to go to attain those heights, but there's something very refreshing about his attitude and approach, because he recognizes where he's come from, he recognizes the struggles, and it's almost like he appreciates his chances, and like he tries to just do everything that he can to make every opportunity count. And that may not be this case. That may not be the case for all the Indian players, right? Because especially through IPL or, you know, the ads, the sponsorships, sometimes you can get kind of lost in yourself and think you're it, and kind of get arrogant and cocky about life. But Jaiswal doesn't seem to carry all of that, and it reflects in his approach when he's on the field. There's something very natural and very genuine about him that I really hope that he retains as the world tries to get more and more out of him. And Shubman Gill, he's my probably one of my favorite players in the Indian team right now. And it's crazy that his average is in like the low 30s in Test cricket. And I know there were a lot of calls like for maybe he should be dropped and all of that. I really hope he gets an extended run. He reminds me of Rohit Sharma, like in his early days when, you know, he was good for a quick fire 20, 30, like the most pleasing 20 or 30 runs you'll see. And I feel like Shubman Gill is a lot more better at this stage than Rohit was. And in this series, he almost showed that extra steel to kind of fight it out. And towards the end, he just seemed very relaxed. And I'm really hoping this was like that breakthrough series for him. And he'll just keep going up and up. So, yeah, I just really wanted to mention these two, because we were talking about, you know, some of these younger players and these breakthrough players. But it's important to remember that Jaiswal and Shubman Gill, even though they're slightly more experienced, they had a great series as well.
That's a great point. I was just going to say that the second most experienced batter in this Indian lineup was actually Shubman Gill with 22 tests. So
Wow.
this was a series where we didn't have experience, and yeah, the both of them stepped up.
See, one thing about Jaiswal, right? 700 plus runs in the series. Enough has been spoken about him, but that Vizag double hundred was like so special, because I think the next highest score was 54, 34. I'm not sure. It was very less. So I mean, that performance I thought was one of the best hundreds that he actually scored. And usually people do that once in a series or once in two, three series, but he did back-to-back tests. You got to give it to him. But I'd like to, I mean, jumping from batsman, I'd like to probably doff my hat to Kuldeep, because he's been
Oh,
absolutely
yeah.
phenomenal in this series. I mean, you talk about Ashwin. I think we need to talk about, I think one thing that we have to talk about is Ashwin's 500th wicket. But before that, I thought Kuldeep was brilliant, absolutely special this series. I mean, not many series go by where the ball he bowled to Zach Crawley cannot be the ball of the series, because Bumrah bowled one to Pope. So, you know, so that was a very, very special ball. I mean, there were times when I was not too happy with Rohit's captaincy, to be honest. I thought he was like waiting for things to happen rather than making it happen. For example, in Ranchi, he introduced Kuldeep in the 25th over. I mean, you could have actually done, and he immediately got a wicket. So he could have actually brought him earlier. I thought Kuldeep's impact was way, way too high in the series, and I think he, whatever changes that he has done in his bowling, in his whatever he's gone back, is there was a time when people used to say that Kuldeep without Dhoni cannot exist because Dhoni is the guy who's like the remote control for Kuldeep, who tells him. And there's this video in New Zealand where Dhoni says that, you know, if you don't change the field, I'll change the bowler, and Kuldeep is like kind of upset. I'm happy that those things have been laid to rest. Kuldeep really came of age this series, I thought, and I'm hoping that, you know, with Ashwin, Jadeja in their last legs, you have Kuldeep to lead the team or lead the attack with probably some other spinner who joins the ranks later on. So Kuldeep was one of my players of the tournament from Indian side, players of the series from the Indian side. And I'd let you guys talk about Ashwin. I'd chime in about what he did and how 500th wicket is so special, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll touch on Kuldeep. I completely agree. I actually had tweeted this that I would be totally okay if Kuldeep got the man of the series. That would be
Yes,
very, very deserving.
absolutely.
Although there's obviously less chance of that happening considering Jaiswal's body of work. But nonetheless, you know, the fact that he turned the second test after England had a really good day of
Yeah.
bowling those 12 overs, and then he was useful. He was amazing in the next test. Just, yeah, couldn't be said about his come back. And I agree with you. Finally, it seems like, you know, they're ready to have Kuldeep long term.
Yeah.
The guy's played like 12 tests in, I don't know, 7 years or something. So
Listen.
it's crazy to be this good and still not get picked all the time. So yeah, it's gonna be fun to watch him in the next phase of Indian cricket. But yeah, coming to Ashwin, I mean, I think the thing that I enjoyed the most about Ashwin in that series, I wasn't even paying attention too much to the 500, was in Ranchi. He said I had to almost rewire my brain because the wicket is a very Eastern Indian wicket, so it's very different. So I had to
Yeah.
bowl differently. And
Yeah.
to me, that is sort of the Ashwin that I, you know, I've learned to respect, because he's like always thinking, yeah, I've played this many games, I've taken 400 wickets, but he's never thinking, I know what's best to do. He's also constantly thinking how to improve, you know, thinking about batsmen specifically, of course. That could just kind of shows like the champion cricketer that he is, and you know, just how well thought out his game is. And obviously not everybody's like that. I feel like Jadeja is the exact opposite, where he's extremely simple and efficient and
Absolutely.
he's still very effective. So each to his own, but it was just really fun to watch Ashwin and his methods. And yeah, to come back strong after a mediocre, I would say, first couple of tests, he came back very strong.
I'd like to add about Ashwin that obviously it's a phenomenal achievement, 500 wickets. You also need to remember that he played his 100th test in this series. Don't think. I mean, I looked up, the next closest was Rahane with 85 tests. I with the active players, I think I don't recall who's close. Jadeja probably, because I think it'll be very hard for an Indian player to reach 100 tests next. It'll take a lot of effort, and 500 wickets is out of question from an Indian player going forward. I think so, because of the frequency of tests and, you know, all that. So I think this is a moment that we should all savor about Ashwin. The guy there has obviously a lot of asterisks in his record, but whatever it is, all said and done, the guy has probably pipped Kumble in my book as India's greatest match winner. You know, for the test that he has done at home, the body of work that he has at home. Interestingly, I thought that he was not in his best in this series. Till Ranchi, he was 7 innings down with just 12 wickets, and that too, a couple of times he got smacked a lot. I remember he went for 5 and over without any wicket in one of the tests. So I thought that obviously something's not right with him. He the way he came back in the second innings at Ranchi, and then, you know, last test, from somewhere down the line to being the leading wicket taker of the series, hats off to him. Especially what happened at Rajkot, he had to fly back, unfortunately. I thought that was the moment in the series that England dropped the ball. with Ashwin down. They should have actually won all. They should have actually taken a little bit of, they should have actually shown a little bit of game awareness and made sure that they lock the series there. But anyway, good for India. But yeah, hats off. Congrats to Ashwin. Special achievement.
Yeah, to your point about, both the number of tests, just because of all the different formats, not a lot of players are going to be hitting 100 tests going forward. There'll be a few, but there won't be many, and especially not from a lot of these test playing nations. It's probably mostly going to be from India, Australia, and England. So in that respect, especially for Ashwin to get to that figure, it's pretty it is special because India is, a land of spinners, and there is a lot of competition for that spot. And so, to not only lead the pack, from the time that he made his debut, but to just make it his own, and even with all of the tests that he missed in that he was not selected for, especially overseas, to still make it to 100 tests, that's a really great achievement. And 500 wickets, again, there's not a lot of players. In fact, I really don't think anybody else is going to get to it, just because, again, just the amount of formats we have, and players just will not be lasting that long. It's a little personal for me, because if I can be a little parochial, when I started watching cricket, so I hail from the state of Tamil Nadu, and I looked
Oh, yeah.
around, and all of these players, most of the Indian players are like from Mumbai, or actually at that time it was like a lot of players from Karnataka, a few players from Hyderabad, and I was like, I looked around, where are the players from Tamil Nadu? And then you have to go back and you say, okay, there was Chris Srikanth, he was there for a bit, and actually when Sadagopan Ramesh came and he played so beautifully, I was like, oh wow, he's so good, it's pleasing to watch. He's like standing up to like Akram and Akhtar and doing really well. And then he kind of faded away. There was Hemang Badani, who I thought was going to be the next big thing in limited overs cricket for India. He also faded away. And then eventually, once Dinesh Karthik, Murali Vijay, and then Ashwin, all these players came, suddenly there seemed more parity, right? And now there are a lot of more exciting players, especially through IPL. We're seeing, the Vijay Shankars, Washington Sundars. Natarajan had his moment of glory. I don't know if that'll ever happen again. But all of that to say, it's just so good to see someone from Tamil Nadu like make that stride up, not just to play so long for India, but to be recognized as one of India's greatest match winners and to be recognized as one of the premier off spinners in international cricket. So that's like a moment of pride, if I can just be a little parochial.
Trust me, I'm his biggest fan, but Vijay Shankar would be really proud to have got a name in this podcast to mention in this call. I'm his biggest fan though. But I think one name we should mention is Sai Kishore. I think he's primed for India in the near future. He's a terrific bowler. He's captain of Tamil Nadu right now, and he bowled brilliantly, especially in the knockouts of Ranji, with key contributions with both bat and ball. I think Sai Kishore should be in the radar somewhere in the future for India. Just that with Jadeja around and Akshar around, it might be slightly difficult right now. But yeah, but I agree. It's good to see.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, he's part of the Gujarat Titans. I think he still is. So if he gets some opportunity, it's gonna be tough. There's Rashid Khan, Noor Ahmed, and there's one more spinner out there, but I hope he gets a few chances.
Jayant
Jayant Yadav. If he gets his chances, you never know. That's unfortunately or fortunately, that's the route that most players get recognized by. But talking about the Indian Premier League, let's jump to the Women's Premier League. Obviously, it lasted only for a few weeks, but there were some really memorable games with some of the top women cricketers from around the world taking part in it. I admit I watched only the highlights. I never watched any of those games live till the eliminator and then the final. And I'm just so happy for RCB. Okay. And I'm not saying this glibly. Ideally, Chennai Super Kings would have had a women's IPL team, but obviously CSK doesn't, the owners don't really care for women's cricket, and so it's unfortunate. But in their absence, I settled for RCB, and some of my favorite players are in that team, so it made it easy. I did think they would win. I wanted them to win, but just the history of RCB in general, I thought it would just be infectious and the women would also struggle to break it. But some amazing performances throughout the tournament, individual performances, and then when it mattered the most, both in the eliminator and final, they came through. But Mike, what are your thoughts on the tournament? Like, just in terms of how it was organized and the crowds and the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I think crowds wise, it was amazing. I feel like every match that I saw, and again, I was in a similar boat. There was only a handful of games that I was able to see live, but whatever highlights I was catching, stadiums are always packed. It was so good to see. Obviously, we've seen that in the MCG long time back in the T20 World Cup final, but to see that consistently is not something we've seen anywhere. Probably the 100 has come, closest to that, but even they are not as full as our stadiums. That was great to see. I read a couple of reports talking about just like facilities at the stadium. I think there's obviously, we can talk about it every year. There's always going to be scope for improvement in Indian facilities. They've been constantly terrible. And I think one of the reports I read, which was really interesting, is from a women's perspective, they're even worse. So that's why like a couple of women cricket writers were writing about it, and I was like, wow, I had not thought about it, because for me, like I can figure things out, if the toilet is not very clean or something, but it's not the same for the women. So that was an interesting bit, which I hope gets worked on. But getting back to the cricket, just really good quality cricket. I was also surprised, like you, that RCB won. Honestly, until their eliminator, if you look at WPL 1 and all the games until that point in this edition, the two top teams by far were Mumbai and DC. So to see them go to the eliminator facing one of them and then to face DC in the final, I was like, there's no chance that a team that they've not beaten, that these two teams have, I think, only beaten once in these two editions before the eliminator and the final. So I was like, there's no way that they're going to beat two of these teams back to back. That's just not going to happen. But I guess the cricket being at Delhi, slower pitch, them having four amazing spinners, all of that helped. But just amazing individual performances for sure. Elise Perry, of course, like nobody gets surprised when she performs. She's won literally everything and played the FIFA World Cup as well. So she's at another level. But it was so great to see Indian talent as well, chime in. Whether it was Asha Shobhna, or whether it was Shreyanka Patil, who's clearly the next big thing in women's cricket, it's just really great to see both of them perform. And even otherwise, Smriti Mandhana, did reasonably well after a first disappointing season. She had a pretty good season, close to 300 runs. So overall, a lot of positives.
Yeah, good. I mean, I also followed off and on, although I was following it quite a bit on the web and all that. So my team was Gujarat Giants, actually. Three of my favorite players are from there: Beth Mooney, Ash Gardner, and Hemalata, who I equated to be female Vijay Shankar, because I feel like they both have similar lines, unfortunately, hard triers. And they didn't do very well, but I'm happy for RCB. I'm glad. I think they peaked at the right time. I thought, DC peaked early, as they say. Shreyanka, yeah, she's special, right? She has that. She's very hard to get away, and she has that, nagging line and length. It's very hard to actually hit Shreyanka. But Asha Shobhna is the person and the bowler who actually impressed me the most. Because she wasn't afraid of lighting the ball even in the death. And I think she'll do really well for India. If one thing that I thought was the pool, over the years that we have seen, right? I think India is actually having a, there was this, I forgot her name, Shabnam Shakil was her name. She's a 17-year-old girl who, I hope I'm getting the name right. Because she's the 17-year-old girl who won the man of the match. She's in Gujarat Giants. She bowled terrifically well. I'm just so glad that this thing has opened up and given so many opportunities to these players that we are able to see. And I thought that the crowds were brilliant. I just thought that was overall the tournament. I think it was much better than the last one. Obviously, it's getting better every year. It'll get better every year. So I feel it's here to stay. And congrats to RCB. They deserved it. Elise Perry, hats off to her. I mean, sticking my neck out and saying that she is perhaps the greatest cricketer after Bradman to actually play the game, because she is really, really good. It's just that we don't realize the gravity of what she's capable of or what she has done. Only after we see on the field that we realize that, wow, okay, this is what she's capable of. And she's a dual international, which we, seldom talk about.
My only thing is for the Women's Premier League, not only do they need more teams, I wonder if they need to be balanced out better. Because right now it feels like DC, MI, and RCB are stacked with the best players. And then the Gujarat Giants and the UP Warriors, they seem to have like a handful of good players and then just like very raw, like domestic talent. So I wonder if, I don't know how that can be fixed, or if it's just like time and new players coming through, or some of these players just improving and getting better. Because right now, it just seems like for the foreseeable future, it'll be just these three teams, MIRCB and DC, which would really be ruling the roost as far as lifting these trophies. But we'll see. There's always surprises that could happen.
Mega auctions, bro. Mega auctions. That's the only solution. Just throw it all open.
And well, but that too has its challenges, right? Like, because now these top teams, they have identities, right? Like, some of these players are going to be associated with these teams, and I don't think it's fair to those teams to lose any of their players through these mega auctions. So I don't know, it's kind of like you got to look at the pros and cons, I guess. But for now, I think like you guys said, I think most people would be happy for RCB to lift a trophy. Even if not the men, at least the women did it. And, especially they just seemed like they all enjoy the game. They all are so passionate about it. And some of these players really came through. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, one point I wanted to make was Smriti Mandhana's captaincy, right? It was so good. I mean, I was really impressed with her, the way that she handled, especially in a must-win game. She was pretty cool under pressure, and I really think that it'll be great, honestly, personal opinion, if she becomes the captain of Indian team rather than what we already have right now, because there has been a trend that's been observed with Harman that she tends to throw the players under the bus when they lose. It's happened in the past as well, and it's happened after this loss, which was not good in my opinion. So I just wanted to call out Smriti's captaincy. I was really impressed with it. She was pretty cool, and she had big personalities to handle, like Sophie Devine and Elise Perry and all those people. So I thought she handled it pretty well. Sorry to cut you.
No. You're right. I fully endorse that, by the way, because I'm not a big fan of Harmanpreet. I mean, she's a great batter, but as a captain, especially some of the way she handled herself in that series, and I think it was Bangladesh, if I'm not
Bangladesh.
mistaken.
It's horrible.
That really was bad, and I've not been a fan of her since. And in sharp contrast, you saw the way that Smriti would just like go to her players, especially the younger players, put her arm around them, always with a smile on her face, even whether the team lost or not just when they won, but even when they lost, she would go to these players and just reassure them. And that was such a good thing to see, and the way she carried herself, and of course the cricket itself, like just her the way she led a team full of stars. I think that was just great. So I fully endorse that. To your point, Elise Perry, I mean, there's not enough words to do justice to what she is, but she is what RCB fans were hoping from ABD, for years, that he would be the one to propel them to a title win, and Elise Perry did it in two. But yeah, I mean, RCB's, they're very lucky to have her. If you're gonna have a star player, you might as well have the brightest one in the bunch, and she came through. And it was almost like the way she, both in the eliminator and final, the way she played, it was almost like, it was almost a very clinical and matter of fact. She didn't, there wasn't a lot of like outbursts of emotions. It was just like, yeah, it's what I do, just another day for me, that kind of attitude. But yeah, I am really excited about both Shreyanka Patil and Asha Shobhna. And completely echo what you guys said about Asha Shobhna, because I think for me she was the standout player in the few games that I saw her. The thing that stands out for me is her attitude, the confidence. In both the eliminator and in the final, she had this almost Surya Kumar Yadav-esque kind of attitude where she was like, "Listen, I'm here. I'll take care of it. Okay, don't worry, I got it." I just love that about her, and I really hope she can carry that on to the international stage if she gets some opportunities there. But Shreyanka Patil, what a star! Like, again, it's just amazing these cricketers come with this self-assuredness, the confidence in their skills, and they back it up. That's just amazing. And so, I think after years and years of just watching, Australia lift titles, I'm hopeful that, these players give me hope that India will, steal a few here and there. So, yeah. So another, the Women's Premier League, like Alyssa Healy said it once, that it's all about showcasing Indian talent, and I think it's slowly doing it, and it's slowly winning over the detractors. And so, I'm really hopeful that in a few years it will continue to make a massive impact, for the Indian women. Let's jump from the women to the men. Mike, what's been going on with the contract stuff? It's something that should not really have so much drama or lead to so many articles and discussions, but here we are. So tell us what's going on.
So the BCCI released the men's contract for this year, and the surprising snub was to Shreyas Iyer and Ishan Kishan. And weeks leading into that, they had made an announcement that all the players released or not currently in the test team need to be playing Ranji, and anybody who will not be doing that will be either dropped or will be impacted. They're not made exactly clear what's going to be the result. And now we see somebody like Shreyas Iyer, who months from before, not even months, I would say what, 2 months before this was 2.5 months before this was playing for India in the World Cup and killing it, highest scorer in the semifinal and all of that. And he doesn't have a BCCI contract now. So it's just a very odd situation. At one end, I like the fact that they are, trying to prioritize test cricket and saying, hey, we're going to back this format. And we want people to take it seriously, take Ranji seriously. But the truth is, like, BCCI never does that. Like, IPL is always the, center of their calendar, and it makes the most money, so it gets the most attention. That's just the truth. I mean, I remember as not even this administration, all the way back to like 2011, there was a time when Sehwag played the full IPL and then went for a shoulder surgery. And because of that, he missed two tests in England. If this was some other tournament, he would have probably missed like half of the IPL and, being ready for the first test in England. So this has been happening for a long time. It's just the pressure that I'm guessing the franchise, they put on BCCI. The BCCI themselves know this generates the most revenue. So all of that combined just makes it very hard for players to do that as well. Like, I mean, Ishan Kishan and Shreyas might be exceptions, and Shreyas seems to even have had an injury angle to it, so his story is even murkier. But some of the bowlers, for example, if let's say they are consistently doing well and they want some rest and they want some light cricket, they can go and bowl 4 overs in a T20 league. That'll be less, for them. If they play one of those T20 leagues, that'll be less work for them than one grungy game. So I don't necessarily blame them trying to keep themselves fresh and all of that. Having said that, yeah, it's probably not a bad thing that the BCCI is trying to prioritize grungy. They just need to be consistent in this approach. I think that'll be the key.
I'm slightly conflicted over here. Like the conflict that I have is obviously I love Test cricket, I love red ball cricket, but let's say a kid who's actually a millennial who's basically seen the entirety of IPL from its inception as a kid, and he has actually grown up with this, you know, with this image that okay, this is the thing that actually will take me to big leagues. I have a feeling like what's wrong in dreaming about a non-red ball career? Like what's wrong in thinking that hey, listen, I'm not here to play red ball, I'm just here to make the bucks in IPL. I mean, it's probably the other side of thought that I'd like to bring it on the table. Like I know red ball, I personally love red ball, I'm saying it again, but I'm just thinking for a kid who actually you know, wants to make it big, he sees IPL as this platform which will give him you know, that leverage to make it big. I see where BCCI are going. I see that BCCI wants to prioritize red ball cricket. Agarkar had a big hand in it, apparently. I'm glad about it. But I just feel that, you know, a guy who actually scored a superb 100 in a knockout game for India suddenly finds himself out of favor for a contract because of what happened. There needs to be some sort of parity here, because if you see, right, there was this article by Indian Express recently. It was a fantastic article about the players actually who've missed Ranji to play to make sure that they are making themselves fit for IPL. Or once they got an IPL contract, they started skipping Ranji. Now you know that Ishan Kishan missed it. I mean, that's something that everyone knows. But there are so many players like Umran Malik, Rasik Salam, Jitesh, who missed 9 games in a row, you know, and Jitesh Sharma. And, you know, so you have people who Hardik Pandya anyways hasn't played for Ranji or any red ball cricket since 2018. So I think at some point there needs to be a question that BCCI needs to ask, whether how do I control this? How do I make sure that okay, these people are not centrally contracted, but they are free, literally playing as a free agent in IPL. So how do I control that? That's probably a double-edged sword, because there is this franchisee pressure and they need to probably work that out. But I'm glad about one thing about the contracts is that they have this fast bowling contract, central contract that they've introduced, which is good to keep you know, fast bowlers. I think Vijay Kumar, Vyashak, and Akash Deep and all those people have been included in that. So I'm glad BCCI is taking care of its players. But this will be a forever raging debate, like white ball, IPL, or red ball. What do you want to choose? Ultimately, my thought process is it's up to the player what he wants to do. But let's see.
I mean, I think for the longest time, the mindset of players and fans is that playing for your country is like the biggest honor, right?
Good point.
It's the greatest thing that you could achieve as a professional cricketer. But then IPL came around, different franchise leagues sprouted. Now players are thinking financial aspect, financial stability. Being able to provide for their families. And these are the things that we do, you know, outside of cricket. You know, we are not thinking about, I want to make my country proud. I'm thinking about, hey, can I pay the rent? You know? So I'm going to find a job that pays well, good benefits, and stuff like that. So when something like that happens, you know, in a country like India, and especially in something like cricket with so many people, you know, cricket is, you know what, how long can you play cricket as a professional? You got, what if you're lucky, you've got 10, 15 years in it. That's like the peak of your physical fitness. And so it's a very narrow time frame. And if you're going to be part of these franchise leagues, that's even less. You probably only have, depending on how good you are, you have only a few years that you could play. So it makes sense to prioritize. You can't come out and say this is what it may be, except for a few players. Most players cannot come out and say, well, this is what I want to do. And I think that's where Ishan Kishan is stuck at, because he seems like the kind of player who enjoys playing limited overs. Maybe I'm completely off base. He just doesn't seem like the kind of person who cares about grinding it out, like in domestic cricket, and like making, like actually digging in and making his case to be a more permanent part of the test squad. And that's totally fine, right? It's just that our mindset is just so accustomed to, what do you mean? Like it's a matter of pride to play for India. And he's like, but I don't, I'm actually totally
But
fine.
I will say this though, I totally get that. I'm aligned on that. What I guess is the difference is that him and Shreyas Iyer were in the test team. So that is where it's a different story. Like if you're clearly calling it out saying, I don't really care for red ball, I'm not gonna play Ranji, totally fine. You can get a C contract or a D contract, whatever that might be, and you can still continue playing white ball cricket for India. But the fact that they are, they're trying to be in the test team and still not giving attention to Ranji, that is where it gets dicey. I think that is a bigger issue for somebody like Ishan Kishan. I think Iyer, it seems like that injury was a separate story, so I think he's probably not the same case.
With Ishan, I thought there's this thing about attitude. I think, I read somewhere that he got upset that Jitesh got selected, and I mean, it's obviously conjecture and rumor or whatever, but there's this report that I read that he was upset about the fact that Jitesh got preference over him, or Jitesh got picked, or an Indian team, which slightly upset him, and he took a break, citing mental health. But yeah, I mean, I hope he's okay. Looks okay though. But I feel that he that confidence that an IPL contract gives you, right? That if earlier in the day, back in the day, players were like, if not playing for India, I'm done. I don't have any other option. I need to do. I think these days that thing is gone. I mean, I'll do something in IPL. I know I have a franchise. I mean, if I do well, I'll go places. So that confidence that IPL has given to players, I feel they can dictate terms. And I think this is where BCCI is finally trying to, show its weight that, listen, it's not like that. Let's talk about it. So at least I'm glad that something has been done.
I think one option that India could try out is, like in England, a lot of players in domestic cricket will decide, okay, I only want to play white ball. So I'll sign a white ball contract. I don't want to play all these first class games. I wonder if that kind of approach would help, because then the players who really want to play for India and like want to play tests for India, they are clear on what they need to do. Whereas players who are more intent on playing limited overs only, either for India or at a franchise level, there's no stigma. There's no one, because right now that's what's happened to Kishan and Iyer. Now there's all these aspersions cast on them that they don't really care, because there were some comments made by Rohit which may or may not have been targeting them, but then everybody thinks he was talking about them. And it's kind of unfair on the players, because we don't know if that's the case. So maybe that would just make it easier for players to focus on what they want to do and what's more important to them.
I think the main problem is the auction system that we have, where there's no control on the upper limit, or there's no cap on a player's worth, and you can actually literally buy, when I say buy, you literally buy a player for like millions of dollars or crores of rupees. I feel that is where probably things needed to be controlled a little bit, because end of the day, a BCCI contract is worth 7 crores or 5 crores, which these people earn in 2 months of IPL. So they feel like, you know, it's not worth it, you know, playing like 15 test matches a year. That mentality itself probably has started creeping in. So I don't know whether you need to have a cap on a player's salary based on age or experience or whatever in IPL, but something has to be done about it because franchisees just love throwing money, 28 crores, I think, for Mitchell's, what, sorry, for Pat Cummins. So 16 crore, I don't know, like whatever. So
I mean, I think the start would should be a players' association. You know, Australia and England have it, and that would
that
be sort of a good negotiating body, like
absolutely.
that doesn't let BCCI dictate too much or the other way around. Yeah, there's got to be a good faith negotiator, but I don't think we're there yet. I don't think
I
BCCI
don't
is even
think that's
thinking about it.
possible in India, though. I mean, I literally don't think BCCI will ever allow something like that to happen because it's obviously so powerful, unlike the other board. So I
And this
don't
is why we call you the elite cynic.
know. No. I've read about it enough to actually, I've read about from Sharda Ugra as well that the Players Association is not possible in India because of the weight that BCCI throws around. So I think Tim May, who was like the FICA president long ago, also said the same. It's not about my opinion. I just feel, I just am quoting what I read.
Well, we're going to be wrapping up soon, and I think it's only fair that we wrap up on a lighter note. You know, it's a rivalry that's kind of snuck up on us, I feel, you know, very quietly under the radar of all the India versus Pakistan and the England versus Australia, and quietly become this at times acrimonious, at times comical, kind of rivalry. And I have to say, just an hour before we started recording today, I was watching some highlights. I was watching CSK highlights, full disclosure. But then there
Got
was a
you.
suggestion to watch this highlights of the last two overs of the Nidaha's
Oh
trophy
yeah,
final, Dinesh Karthik.
yeah.
I've watched, I think that's the, for me, that's my most watched video. I think that's the cricket video that I watched the most.
I think it's the most watched cricket video in the history of YouTube as well. Because it has like 19 million views or something, Dinesh Karthik.
Yeah, I mean it's short. It's like 10-minute clips, and it's like really good resolution, and it's really nice. So I watched that so many times, and I watched it again today. And the thing that stood out for me this time was the crowd, right? You know, there were mostly Sri Lankan fans in the stands. You know, there were Indian fans too, but mostly Sri Lankan fans. They were all cheering. When India, like when Dinesh Karthik was hitting all the runs, Vijay Shankar hit that one boundary, they were all cheering. But this time I was able to realize that they were not necessarily cheering for India.
They're
These Sri
cheering
Lankan
against
fans were cheering against Bangladesh, and they were doing the whole Nagin dance and
nagging
that
dance. Yeah.
delirious joy when, you know, Dinesh Karthik hit that last six. I was thinking, what is it with Bangladesh and Sri Lanka? And I think a lot of it went back to that time. I think it was probably that tournament when it all begun, actually.
True.
So Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, this fascinating and amusing rivalry. They just can't seem to get out of each other's way. Of course, the most memorable one was from the last World Cup with Angelo Matthews being timed out. And yeah, so anyway.
My memory of that Nidaha's trophy was the same. I mean, I think I forgot the name of the bowler who started the Nagin dance basically, and it's now I think unofficially quoted as Nagin Derby,
Yeah.
the rivalry. It's funny, right? Basically, what Mushfiq? I mean, that guy is so cheeky, man. I mean, I love that guy in the sense I love him as a batsman. But I hate him as a person because he tries to pull up all these antics off the field. He did it against us after losing after we lost against West Indies in 2016 T20 semi-final, and recently also after winning the ODI series, he brought the helmet and took me a while to realize what is he doing. But he is imitating Angelo Matthews, so it's quite funny. The rivalry, I think it's India Pakistan is history now. I think Bangladesh Sri Lanka from Asia needs to be talked about. It's top tier rivalry. I
Well,
think somewhere Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, no disrespect to Sri Lanka or Bangladesh, but They're almost at level pegging
No,
in
that's
terms
true.
of, yeah.
It's very true. For any good rivalry, you need teams to be on a mostly even keel, right? I mean, one of the reasons India versus Pakistan is not as fun anymore is because India's been mostly dominating Pakistan.
Dominating, yeah.
Same thing with Australia and England. Australia's been mostly dominant with England, like for, patches, they kind of really do well against Australia, but for most part, Australia just dominates them.
So
But Sri
I
Lanka.
mean it depends on where they're playing, because if I mean this
Right.
Ashes was okay, but yeah, I agree with you. In Australia there's no chance. England have been sleeping since 2010. But yeah, you're
Yeah.
right about this rivalry. Yeah, go ahead.
So Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, they're kind of on even terms right now, and I'm sure Sri Lanka is very annoyed about that fact because,
Yeah.
these are former World Cup champions. They
Champions.
made it to like so many World Cup finals. They've actually defeated South Africa in South Africa, which is something that even India has not managed to do. And
Correct.
so now they're scrapping with Bangladesh, and there's that sense of of offense, like,
Yeah.
how could you guys be on equal terms with us? And the whole timed out incident, even Sri Lanka is they can't seem to let go of that issue,
Yeah.
since, and Bangladesh, it's almost like that gives them that extra sense of like, we've got under your skin. And
Yeah.
so it's just amusing to me. But in terms of the actual cricket too, Bangladesh has definitely made strides,
Yeah.
which is one of the reasons why they're competing well against a team like Sri Lanka. And I mean, overall too, they're doing well against even the higher ranked sides too, in Bangladesh. So in terms of cricket, if you talk just purely about the cricket, Bangladesh has made some, good strides with some exciting players coming through, players that I think more and more people will be talking about in the coming years. Especially there's a new player, Rishad, and he, I think for the longest time, Bangladesh did not have any good power hitters, and suddenly they
Okay.
have really improved on that, in that respect. So that makes Bangladesh really, for the opposition, it makes them really challenging. So yeah, I think that's where we are at right now. It's throwing out some good cricket, but then you have all of these drama around, which as a neutral is just amusing to follow.
Right now they both are locked in a test series. I mean, there's no competition at all. I mean, Bangladesh is a very poor test side in my view. They did win a test match in New Zealand, which was good, but they've just beaten Sri Lanka once. They've not even beaten them once at home. They last won at Colombo in 2017, and Bangladesh as such is not a great test team in my opinion. So interestingly, what I've noted is that in this current test series, Bangladesh is a very hard test team. I mean, should not say that Bangladesh are pushovers, but they did lose to Afghanistan at home. So with Mehdi and Taijul, right, they have these terrific spinners that at home they're very hard to get. Even India were like 73 for 7 at Mirpur, and somehow they scraped through with Ashwin and Iyer. They always give this fight, but somehow end up losing. They defeated New Zealand last time and got a lead, and then lost the second test and all that. So, what they did against Sri Lanka is they chose to bowl after winning the toss because they produced the fast wicket and they wanted to take advantage using their pacers, which is rare because they don't do that. I was just following the test score briefly, and Sri Lanka were 50 odd for 5, and somehow the captain Dhananjay De Silva was like a terrific player, 10 hundreds already. I think he and another guy called Camindo Mendes, they both partnered together and scored hundreds each, and they got them to a respectable score. So now the ball is in Bangladesh's court. But interestingly, they thought that they tried to outperform Sri Lanka by preparing a wicket which will help fast bowlers. So I just feel this rivalry is limited to limited overs. In test cricket, I think Sri Lanka has always been bossing over them. I hope we have a good test series though, that the ongoing test series. But for Sri Lanka has bossed over Bangladesh at Mirpur every single time for the last time immemorial, if you see the list that they come up. So what they have smartly done is they didn't organize any tests in Mirpur this year. They've skipped Mirpur. So hopefully they get one all at least. I don't know. I mean, the test, it's just our first day is over. So I hope that we have an exciting test series in the ongoing test. So that's so that I thought, I mean, the rivalry is exciting. It was good to see, but the test series will be interesting to watch now what happens. But last series, I think Angelo Matthews was the last series in Bangladesh. Angelo Matthews was the man of the series. I think that somehow is like sweet irony right now, where he's like the center of all the controversy that they have. So.
He's like Bangladesh's favorite villain right now. So, but I mean, overall, as amusing as it is, this rivalry, I think it's nice for cricket to have another rivalry besides, the India versus Pakistan and the England versus Australia, because
Pakistan
it's
Zimbabwe. Pakistan, I mean, if you don't know the
that
Mr. Bean thing, if you remember from the
Oh
World
yeah, oh, those are
Cup.
good times. Those are good
No,
times.
I'm not joking. That Mr. Bean thing, there's this tweet that a guy actually sent that saying that you guys fooled us by sending this fake bean. Be ready for a beating, and they beat them at the World Cup.
I
It just
remember
blew
that.
up
I
now.
remember that. Yeah. No, that was great. That was a lot of fun. No, I'm just happy that this is happening. And but it's not, terrible in that it's between two poor teams, two weak teams who are just kind of beating up on each other. I think they both have a lot of potential. They have a lot of younger, exciting players coming through, and who in the coming years will really get established, and then they will really challenge some of these more established teams. But for now, they're providing some great content for all of us, so I appreciate that. So it's been a fascinating year already. We're only 3 months in. We witness unlikely franchise league champions, basketball met a worthy opponent and had to exceed because it was, I believe, McCollum's first loss as coach, like a series loss as coach. And we have all of these new and exciting rivalries that are popping up. So I'm excited to see what's in store for the rest of the year. Obviously, the next couple of months are going to be all about the IPL, but then we have the T20 World Cup and some exciting series coming down the road. So, Karthik, hopefully we can have you back again
Sure.
and talk about all of those again. So
Definitely. I love coming here. I love talking cricket, something that I simply breathe every single day. It's a pleasure always.
thank you. Well, on that note, to our listeners, thank you for listening. Please be sure to follow The Last Wicket on your social media feeds. And hopefully, the next time you hear us will not be another 3 months from now. We'll try our best, but till then, we'll talk to you later. Bye. Thank you for listening to an episode of The Last Wicket. Do check out other episodes on your podcast app of choice or at thelastwicket.com. This podcast is a Cricket Guys production featuring your hosts, Benny and Mayank. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do let a friend know, rate and subscribe on your platform of choice, follow us on your social media feeds, and leave us a voice message if you would like to share your thoughts with us. Thank you again for listening, and from all of us here at The Last Wicket, stay safe, stay healthy.